We began in chapter 3, verse 1. Last week we spent the entire time on that particular verse looking at the idea of teachers, of becoming teachers when we should not be. And so we'll not go over that anymore other than to read it, and let's start now. Let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, knowing that as such we shall incur a greater judgment. So he now is talking about the danger of putting yourself in that particular role of being a teacher. Now, from there, he's getting ready to develop the idea of the tongue. He's going to start talking about the tongue and the danger that there is in the tongue. Now, obviously, we understand that there is a great danger when it comes to speaking or teaching, because the teacher uses the tongue. And if they use that tongue in the wrong way, say the wrong thing, why, the just untold amount of damage will be done. However, the tongue can be used improperly and is used improperly in innumerable numbers of ways. And so this chapter is going to tell us now about the danger and the magnitude of damage that can be done by the human tongue. So in verse 2, he says this. He said, "For we all stumble in many ways." Now we might stop right there and take a look at that before we get on down here. Now, James is admitting that all of us do make lots of mistakes in many, many ways. And this is not talking about the tongue right here. It's talking about every other way that we do stumble. Now, a key right here to that word, and we're not going to elaborate on it in great length tonight, but I think a key in there is stumble. And it kind of helps us understand about sins. John, in 1 John, talks about sin. And he says that, he uses two viewpoints. He said, "If we walk in the light as he is in light, we have fellowship one with another, and the blood of his Son cleanses us from all sin." Now, in that passage, that says, if I walk in the light as he is in the light, then I am walking and I am having fellowship with him, I mean with everybody who does that, and with God. Does that mean that I'm a good man or a bad man if I'm walking in the light? A good man. See, if I'm walking in the light. Does that verse right there say that I sin, or does it say that I don't sin? It really says I do sin. What it says is, if I walk in the light as he is in the light, he can't get any better than that, right? Alright, now, if I walk in the light as he is in the light, now number one, I have fellowship one with the other, and the blood of Jesus his Son cleanseth me from all sin. Now how can a fellow who's walking in the light sin? That just sounds like a total impossibility, doesn't it? For a man who is walking in the light, a man who is walking and doing what God would have him to do, how can that individual sin? I think the key to that whole thing is this word right here, stumble. A man who is walking in the light does not continue in his sins. But it doesn't mean that he will not stumble occasionally. But when he does stumble, then John goes ahead and deals with that. But if we confess our sin, then he's faithful and just to forgive us our sins. And then what does he say about the man who says, "I never sin"? He's a liar. So he puts it very, very bluntly. So yes, we do sin. And James says that we all sin in many ways. That we do that. But what he's talking about here is stumbling. And so the point I'm making is there's a vast difference in me falling down and laying and wallowing in the mud, and in me stumbling and falling and quickly getting up and getting back on that right path. Now, this is the point that he's making, that we all stumble. That is, we all do make mistakes in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man. Now, it might be that I ought to just read that the rest of this class period. In other words, not do anything except just go back over it and 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 over it again. because that indeed is a very important verse right here. So let's look down and see what it says. Now, if any stumbleth not in word or in what he says, the same is a perfect man, and able to bridle the whole body as well. Now, doesn't that really say that the last thing that you're going to conquer is your tongue? In other words, in putting it in other language, in paraphrasing it, that the last thing that you're going to bring under control is your tongue. Now, I'm sure a lot of times get that reversed, and we think that other things are the hardest to bring under control. And there are many sins that are terrible sins. Sexual desires, power, riches, all of these things are dealt with in the Bible. They are very powerful, powerful things. But what this says is that if I am able to control my tongue, I have these other things in control. These other things really are easier to control than controlling the tongue. It's an interesting thing, really, to think about Moses. In Psalms 106 and in verses 32 and 33, Moses didn't get to enter into the promised land. And he led the children of Israel for 40 years. What was his mistake? What was his problem? He led the children of Israel for 40 years. Now, he went up, and you remember he hit that rock. And it has been wrongly proclaimed for years and years and years and years that his mistake wasn't hitting the rock when God didn't tell him to hit the rock. Now, the Bible doesn't say that. The Bible does say, and Moses spake unadvisedly with his lips. What does it mean, speaking unadvisedly? It's just a nice way of saying, said something you shouldn't say. Isn't that right? You said something you shouldn't say. Now, Moses, at this time, in his anger, in his frustration, and I might stop, did he have grounds to be frustrated? Yeah. Oh, boy. I would have thrown a temper tantrum long, long ago. See? Now, what did Moses do? What did he do? What did he speak? It's kind of interesting to try to see, what did he speak? The only thing that I can figure out that he spoke there was that he really didn't give God the glory. That he turned around, he hit that rock, and he told those people in his anger, he said, "Shall we bring forth water out of this rock?" And instead of giving it all of the glory and the power to God. And in that total frustration, he in that anger, he did that. And that was his only sin, the only problem that he had in that whole 40 years. And yet, God then said that he couldn't go over into that promised land. So, as you can see, that's just, a perfect illustration here of if a man is able to control his tongue, then he's able to control his whole body also. It says the same is a perfect man. Now, the word perfect means complete. It means having no parts lacking is really what it is. If I am perfect physically, of which I was getting ready to say I am, but I'm almost perfect physically. I've had my tonsils taken out, and that's the only imperfection that I have. Otherwise, I am a perfect physical specimen. Now, what do I mean by that? Get your silly grins off of your face as you look at me. I may be missing a few hairs up here. But otherwise, I am a perfect physical specimen. Now, all that I'm saying is, I have all my parts. I have a nose, and I have ears, and I have fingers, and I don't have any of those things cut off. I have had my tonsils taken out, and I have lost just a wee bit of hair on top. And that's the only imperfection. Now, do you see what I'm talking about? What's the definition of perfect then? When I say that I'm almost perfect. Having all the parts. See? Now you might say, well, they don't look very nice. That'll make any difference, see? They're not in the right places. That'll make any difference. I have all the parts. Now, what does it mean here that if I am able to control my speech, then I am a perfect man. What would that mean? It's not talking about physical, is it? See? Doesn't have anything to do with my tonsils or my hair. But I'm perfect in what sense? In what way? Yeah, I have my whole act together. That's a good way to put it. I have everything together. I know how to conduct myself in every realm. I do not make mistakes. It's just that simple. See? So when I do not make any mistakes with my mouth, then you can be assured that everything else is in its proper place. So that starts out with telling us really how important that mouth is and how important that tongue is. Before we go any farther, how much do we use our mouth in comparison to other things? How often do you think about this verse? Now think about that. Tell me how many times you thought about it today. How many times did you think, now I have to watch my speech today? Isn't it something that we just kind of take for granted, that we just kind of put her in gear and take off and let it go day after day after day after day? And about the only time we stop to think about it is when we study the book of James. Isn't that about it? You see? Which shows us, really, that we've kind of got things turned upside down. Now, we take great care in being honest and not taking somebody else's money. And if somebody left their purse in here, I don't want it left in here. I'd run, hey, here's your purse. And if somebody said, well, look in it and see a name, I'd like for somebody else to be around. You know, I don't want to steal a dollar. I don't want to steal a dollar. But how careful am I, you see, when it comes to my mouth? So those verses right there are tremendously important. Now, as we see here, he says, you're a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. What is a bridle? Use it on a horse. What does a bridle do when you put the bridle on a horse? It controls a horse. That's the element, that's the instrument that controls a horse. So now I'm able then to control my whole body as well if I can just control that tongue. Verse 3, he gives an illustration. Now if we put the bits into a horse's mouth so that they may obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Now, before we go any farther, what's his point? You go out and you put a bridle, which has a bit, you put it in the horse's mouth, and when you put that bit in the horse's mouth, how much of the horse do you have under control as you're riding the horse? You have more than his head, don't you? You have the entire horse under control if you can control that bit that's in that mouth. Now, what's his point? His point is that little things really count. Little things are what really counts. That little bit can control that whole horse, and that little tongue. See, if I can control that little tongue, then I can control my whole body. Well, the next thing that he uses then as an illustration is, behold, the ships also, though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, are yet directed by a very small rudder wheresoever the inclination of the pilot desires. So, as you go out, you see a great gigantic ship. That ship can be made to turn, go wherever it wants to turn. Now, the way that it's made to turn is in the back of the ship, clear at the rear of the ship, down in the water, there's a little flat paddle. That's really what it is. In those days, it would have been made out of wood and just been a flat paddle. Today, they make it out of steel in the big ships. But all that you have to do is just move that little paddle, and as you move that little paddle, the water hits it, and then it pushes the rear end of the ship around, pushing the front end of the ship around, and the ship is going to go wherever you want it to go. So if you have a pilot then guiding the ship, what does the pilot really control? As we go get on the ferry over here, holds what, 300 and some cars? Gigantic thing, and takes off. Up there is a pilot. What does the pilot move? What does he control? Just one thing. The little paddle down at the rear end of the boat. That's all he controls. See, that's all he moves. But when he moves that, then he has total control of the entire boat. Now, his point is, little things do count. He uses an animated object, something that's alive, a horse. Then he uses an inanimate object, something that's dead, a ship. And he shows that in both realms, control always comes down to these small things. So in the human body, if we can control that tongue, then we can bring the total body under control. Alright, in verse 6, so also the tongue, it's the same thing, is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. Behold how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. So here now he likens the tongue and the words that come out of it to a fire that you're setting aflame. The tongue is a small part, and yet it boasts great things. What's the limit that little small tongue of mine can say? It's unlimited, isn't it? You mean, and receive in what it can say. It can boast all those great things. So it has that power. It's just unlimited. And then he uses an illustration. How great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. This last summer got to see my first forest fire. I was out on Helen's back porch putting on a railing, and I looked up over a mountain, just as I looked up, all of a sudden just a big pillar of smoke just bellowed up over that thing about the size of a house. Wow! And I yelled in for her to come out. And she did something. It took her 30 seconds or a minute to get out. And when she got out, that thing had enveloped that whole hill. It had moved down. And I couldn't believe myself. You see, in how fast it was moving. And airplanes were coming. And so all day, I watched that thing as it went from here, just almost exploded all over the place. And so finally then, I drove up after they got the fire put out. It was still smoking some. But drove up, and just in that short little period of time, before they got in, I think 8 airplanes and 2 helicopters and several trucks and firemen all over the place, it burned over 300 acres up there. Now, what in the world, what started that thing? And what started it was a pickup truck. A pickup truck ran off the road up there, and if it's one I saw, I was just sitting beside the road, and a little spark of some kind came out. And so a little spark burned up 300 and some acres in just 2 or 3 hours, you see, like that. A small thing. It took the whole firefighting force to put it out. That's his point. That's what he's saying. Now, we have that kind of power in our tongue. And if they hadn't called in 8 airplanes, 2 helicopters, remember that, and all of this firefighting equipment, how far would that fire burn before it burned out? I have no idea. It would have burned to the Columbia River. You say, I don't suppose it'd jump across there. It would just kept burning until somehow or another, some way, millions and millions of acres would have been burned. That's his point. That once we let the word out of our mouth, then it can cause so much damage that he uses it setting on fire. The Bible uses that in other senses. In Proverbs chapter 16, verse 27, it says, a worthless man deviseth mischief, and in his lips there is a scorching fire. See, the Bible deals with those lips in that way. Now, a statement, a wrong kind of a statement, can consume and destroy various things. An individual, a family, a church, a business, a nation. It did the stock market. One man, on one occasion, made a statement that it's getting ready to the bottom fall out. And from that, the word started going through, and the bottom did fall out because everybody ran down to sell. It was a few years ago that they traced it back to this one individual. People as old as Steve back here can remember in World War II. He can go back to previous, but World War II, the motto was out there. And I forget what it said. Steve, what was it? They were going around, you know, watch your...
Something about loose lips sink ships.
Yeah, loose lips sink ships. Yeah. And such as that. And they had posters up about what you can do with a word that is going out. And in other words, if somebody worked on a battleship, don't talk about it. Don't tell anybody about it. Even if you don't have to have top-notch clearance and all this kind of stuff. Do not say anything, because if you tell the enemy one thing, then the enemy can sink, you see, a whole ship. And so everybody knows that. And this is the point that he's making here, the danger that there is. Before we go any farther, let me read you some statements here from the book of Psalms. In Psalms 120 and verse 2, David said, "Deliver my soul, O Jehovah, from lying lips and a deceitful tongue." And then in Proverbs 26:18, several statements that he makes. He says, "As a madman who casteth firebrands and arrows and death, so is the man that deceiveth his neighbor and saith, am I not in sport?" Now, when somebody deceives his neighbor, lies to his neighbor, misguides his neighbor, and then you come up and you say, hey, you know, you said this, what is the general way of getting out of it? Oh, just kidding. You know, when I said that ugly thing about Carl, you know, I was just kidding. Well, if the thing that I said about him, I just kidding, and then people took it seriously and the way it goes throughout the country, what good does that do Carl? The fire has already been set, see. Then it says, "For lack of wood, the fire goeth out, and where there is no whisperer, contention ceaseth." So, any time that there is a problem, a continual problem, you know that there's somebody with a tongue that is going on. He says, "As coals are to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to inflame strife." What do you do every once in a while? You're sitting around a campfire and the fire's about to go out. You stir the coals, don't you? Or you throw on another piece of wood. I said that's the way that you inflame strife, is throw in something else. Said, "The words of a whisperer are as dainty morsels, and they go down into the innermost parts." Now, if I want you to listen to me, you know, I don't get up and talk like I'm talking now, because you're probably not listening now. You probably got your mind somewhere else. But if I want you to listen, all I've got to do is I've got to say, "Brian, did you hear about..." And say, "Brian, I have something to tell you after class. Come up here." "Did you?" And that's all that I have to do. And boy, old Brian will just soak it up. "Is that right?" It will go down. And other people will be around like this. And if anybody can hear it, down it go. Isn't that what secrets and whispering? You see the effect that it has on the human race? So that's what he's saying, that power that there is in the tongue. It said, "Fervent lips and a wicked heart are like an earthen vessel overlaid with silver dross." How would you like it if I gave you a present? And it's silver, solid silver. A beautiful thing. And you take it, and on the inside of it, it's dirt. It's just junk that I've cleaned out under the cabinet. Got all the filth and the junk out, and I cleaned my bathroom shelves out, and I swept the garage and got that, and then put it all together, stuck it together, and then had him to cover it with silver and give it to you. A little nauseating, isn't it? Something like that. Now, that really is what it is. A person that's ugly on the inside, but he speaks on the outside and tries to do it with a fervent lips, with a silver lips. We call it a silver tongue. That's how bad it is. Then he goes on and said, "He that hateth dissembleth with his lips." If somebody is hating somebody, they dissemble with their lips. What do you do when you dissemble? Have you ever dissembled? Go and ask him to symbol for me. What would you do? That means hypocrisy. You play the part of a hypocrite. You act. You are one way and you act another way. So you hate. But you might act like you love somebody, and then with your lips you let it out. But he lieth up deceit within him. When he speaketh fair, believe him not, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Somebody that hates somebody else has a heart that is still full of evil, and it says there are seven abominations in his heart. What's the picture that he tries to get there?
Totally.
You're just totally abominable, you see, in your heart. Now, when in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 37, it said, "By your words thou shalt be justified, and by your words thou shalt be condemned." I've got down here that a fire, the tongue, and a fire are alike in the following ways. They both inflict pain. They both destroy. They both go out of control. They both take time to burn out. And so the tongue and a fire really are the same thing. Okay. He goes on then to just ask that rhetorical question. Now in verse 6. And the tongue is a fire. He said it does have that power. The very world of iniquity. Iniquity means sin. What does the statement, the very world of iniquity, mean? It's kind of a form statement, really, from my viewpoint. At least that's where I normally hear it. Was back in the Midwest on the farm and so forth. Be using that. Other people do use it. The way it appears to me is it's just an enormous amount. It's just an enormous amount. We talk about it. Just I feel like I've got the world on my shoulders. What do I mean by that? How much more problems could I have than to have the world on my shoulders? That's all of them. The only problems there are in this world, and that's the whole thing. What does it mean when the summertime comes and neighbors start going one to the other and they say, "Come over and get some tomatoes. We just have whirls of tomatoes." Do they mean that they have whirls? They use it in the plural. You know, we have whirls. We see what it means. Just an over super abundant amount. Now, what about the tongue? The tongue here is a fire, the very world of iniquity. It is so filled full of sin that it fills the whole world. That's how much sin there is in the tongue. Now, are we beginning to get the point that James is trying to make about how dangerous the tongue is?
Mm-hmm. Ever since Carl Sagan, you've come to get a better idea of what the word cosmos means. It's just the whole creation.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the word used here is, cosmos.
Mm-hmm. Right, just the whole creation. Just a superabundant over. There's no way to exaggerate. You see how much you can't even start to comprehend how much when you start talking about the world of iniquity. Now, the tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body, and sets on fire the course of our life, and is set on fire by hell. Now that is pretty ugly language when you get down to it. Just stop to think what he says. He said, now the tongue is a fire. He said, I'm not asking you whether it is. I'm telling you, it is a fire. It is the world of iniquity. Super abundant amount. The tongue is set among our members so that which defiles the entire body. We defile our whole body by the tongue. What do you do with a ship by the rudder? What do you do with a horse by the bit? There's no such thing as controlling half a horse. And there's no such thing as controlling a half a ship. And there's no such thing as controlling the top half of your body or above the neck. You see, the rest of me is a pretty good guy. I just talk too much. I admit I say the wrong things, but I am really a nice guy. Now, what's wrong with that? That's not the way James talks about it. See? No. No, you defile the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life. Now, the American Standard says, and sets on fire the wheel of nature. I think if the wheel of nature really is what it says, I think that the course of our life is what it means. I mean, as the New American Standard translates it, the course of our life. I used last week an illustration as a false teacher. If I teach you a false doctrine, I may be honest in it, or I may not be honest in it, but I teach you a false doctrine. And you accept that false doctrine. And some people will accept the false doctrine. Now, you might say, well, but a person shouldn't. You ought to check. Well, I know they do, but they don't. See, they really don't. It's like a guy driving along throwing a cigarette at him. He shouldn't do that. But he does. Somebody that sees it throwing out the car there should stop and put it out. But they don't. This is the point. So, when the guy throws a cigarette out, damage is going to come. See, regardless of whether he should or whether he shouldn't. Now, I say something. I teach false doctrine. I shouldn't, but do. And you are going to accept it. Some people are. You shouldn't, but you will. And then what are you going to do with that false doctrine? You're going to teach it to somebody else. You're going to teach it to your children. They're going to teach it to their children. And the way it goes. The way it goes. And how many people can be affected by something that I say here tonight in this class? Untold millions of people. How many doctrines are there that are taught tonight that are false because one man thought them up 100 years ago, 500 years ago, 2,000 years ago? The doctrine of Calvinism. Augustine thought that up. He saw little babies crying while he was trying to preach. And so he tried to work that out. Why are these babies always interrupting me? And he came to the conclusion that I'm a man of God trying to preach the Word of God, and they're out there interrupting me. So they must be doing the work of Satan. Now, since they're doing the work of Satan, it's not because they're logically doing it, because they don't have any logic. They're not thinking, you see. So they just had to be born with it. And so, therefore, little children are born evil. Now, how many people are affected today in this world by that man's philosophy that he started back there about 1,700 years ago? Untold millions of people are affected by that. And you can just go on and on and on. Charles Darwin conceived of an idea of evolution. He didn't have the idea of evolution the way that it is right now. If you could raise him from the grave and say, tell us your idea of evolution, we would say, boy, it's just kindergarten stuff. It's just barely there. But he had the idea. He presented the idea. And how many people now have taken a hold of it? Not one shred of evidence. There's not one evolutionist who's ever lived that has one fact that they can present to show that evolution is true. But how many people believe in evolution? See? And so, it's impossible. That's the point I'm trying to make. It is impossible for us to understand the damage that can be done by a word, an idea that we express. And it just goes on and on and affects millions and millions and millions of people. You ever stop to think? Just try this tonight. Sit down and think of some of the crazy things you believe because some crazy person said it. Now, that's kind of hard to do. Why is that hard to do? You don't have any crazy thoughts. That's right. See, everything I believe is, you know, it's not crazy. So, do this. Have you ever had a crazy idea? Have you ever thought of anything? You thought it was right and then you changed your mind later? That you learned better? But you did certain things for years and years because you thought that you should be doing it. I'm not talking about spiritual things. I'm talking about some other thing. Rubbing a penny on a wart. Putting a frog under your bed. you know, if you get a headache or something of this nature. How many people, when somebody comes up with some idea, how many people believe this? And you stop to think, and a little while, if you're honest with yourself, you'll say, you know, I have done a lot of those stupid things that started with stupid people who said stupid things, and it caused me to act stupid. And just go ahead, have a good confession time with yourself. Nobody else. I know you won't admit it to anybody else. But you will find that your life has been filled with a bunch of junk like that.
I was just going to say, one of the main reasons that the tongue does so much damage, or why it's able to control the whole body, is what Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, and how it speaketh. It's really not the tongue, it's the heart that's controlling it, the tongue. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's the inside controlling it. That evil inside then comes out, and then it just takes off like wildfire. So the influence of the tongue is trying to show. So it just goes from one generation to another generation to another generation to another generation. And there are things that can be said today that will affect mankind as long as this world stands. All right? Then the next thing he says is, and sets, after he says, and sets on fire the course of our life, and is set on fire by hell. Boy, that is pretty tough language. Now, where is the origin? What is the origin of falsehood? What is the origin of gossip? What is the origin of somebody saying something about somebody that they shouldn't say? What is the origin of it? We as well admit it. The origin, everything has an origin, doesn't it? Remember one time they asked Jesus, by what authority do you do these things? And that's a good question. He was doing it by some kind of, there's something back of it. Now, right here is what we find here. And that is that James just said that hell is the origin of loose lips. Hell is the origin of everything that has been said that shouldn't be said. It reminds me of a passage in John chapter 8, verse 43. Jesus made this statement. Jesus, talking to the Jews, he said, "Why do you not understand my speech?" That is, why can you not understand my doctrine? Why can't you understand what I'm saying to you? Stop to think about that for just a minute. Jesus preached and tried to get a pretty simple message across to the people. And apparently there were a great number of people that could not comprehend it. And it wasn't for lack of education. Why do I say that?
A lot of the Pharisees.
They were the highest educated people on the face of the earth. It wasn't lack of education. It wasn't lack of plain speech that Jesus gave. It wasn't because of that, because he taught very clearly. It wasn't that the message was too complicated, because the simple people understood it. Why? Well, he said, you cannot understand my speech. He said, even because you cannot hear my word, you can't comprehend what I'm saying. It's impossible. Ye are of your father, the devil, and the lust of your father it is your will to do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and standeth not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, there's where we're getting back to, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar, and the father thereof. So every falsehood you've ever told had its origin with Satan. The home of Satan is hell. It has nothing to do with a heavenly character whatsoever. Now, I hope tonight that this shakes you as much as it shakes me. I'm kind of going slowly on the thing so that we can see the impact and the power that we have in that little red thing that flops around in our mouth all the time. And what we can do with it, and the influence we have with it, and the danger that there is in there, is just a terrible, terrible thing.
But in connection with this, we think of Satan as a great deceiver also, because people don't believe this who are deceived in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so people in the warehouse talk among themselves that, well, you know, religious people think that this real bad heavy metal music comes from Satan, you know.
I ask.
We know it doesn't come from God. Where do you think it comes from if it doesn't come from God? And, mm-hmm. and they really resent that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. It's in there. Now, the origin of the whole thing then is hell. Let me ask you a question. If you had a 16-year-old daughter that was leaving home, you say she's not going to leave home at 16. Well, she may. If you had a 16-year-old daughter that was getting ready to leave home, go to New York, you had one hour to spend with her from here at the airport, what would you talk to her about? I know. The reason is because I have a daughter. See? I said, honey, now when you get there, you watch those men. Right? That's the biggie. Nothing worse than a man. See? So you watch those louse. Your dad's the only good guy in the world. Every man is rotten. And you watch, and so I would start. You watch the dope peddlers, and you watch the people that do this, and you watch that. And do you know what? I think I'd put her on that plane without ever saying, honey, watch your tongue. You be truthful with yourself and ask you, do you tell your kids that? Do we really try to instill within our children the watching of the tongue as much as we do the watching of the rest of the body? What does this say? See, that's the impact that I hope that we see tonight. The catalog of sins, really, with the tongue. Let me give you a few right here. The word devil. You know what the word devil means? Why Satan is called the devil? The word devil means a caster through. Now that doesn't make sense, I know, a caster through. So let me put it in good English. One who cast through. One who throws through. Now if I could take an arrow and throw it through your body, then I'm a devil. I'm a caster through. I've cast something through your body. That's not what it's talking about. It's talking about the casting of accusations, the casting of words. That's what Satan does. It means slander, accuse. The idea of a false witness, that Satan accuses us of false things and tries to get God to condemn us in a false way. So his name is the devil. Other words are liar, perjury, blaspheming, false doctrine, slander, backbiting, gossip, whispering. We're told to refrain our tongue from evil. Psalms 34:13, 1 Peter 3:10. David said in Psalms 141, verse 3, set a watch before my mouth and keep the doors of my lips. And so we can see that the Bible really is just full of teaching about those lips. Now then, in verse 7 he said, for every species of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. Wonder why he tells us that. I wonder why he tells us that every animal, every creeping thing there is, has been tamed. You can tame a flea, a gnat, a rattlesnake, an elephant. Man can tame anything that's out there. I wonder why he's giving us a lesson in zoology. Well, he says here is something about man. Man has the ability to tame everything on the face of this earth, but verse 8, but no man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. Now think about that. If I brought half a dozen rattlesnakes in here next week and threw them down on the floor, I don't know what you'd do. You'd run, squeal, and get those things out of here. And I tell you, look, you can make pets out of those rattlesnakes. You can do that. Now, you wouldn't want to, would you? I mean, you wouldn't want them. You'd say, you go do it. I don't want to make a pet out of a rattlesnake, even though you could make a pet out of a rattlesnake. They're too dangerous. They bite you. And when you get bit by a rattlesnake, you swell up. And you'll be in hospital for 3, 4, 5 days, sometimes for a week. And it's very painful, you see. You generally don't die, but boy, it hurts you. So get the rattlesnakes out of here. That's generally the way we think about it. But now it says, every preacher can be tamed, but how many people have tamed the tongue? No man. No man has tamed the tongue. And that tongue cannot be tamed. I'm going to talk about that. And it is full of deadly poison. This is not poison that sends you to the hospital. This is not a poison that just hurts you for a week and then you get over it. This is a poison that ruins your whole life here, ruins everybody else's life, and finally sends you to hell. This is full of deadly poison. Now, what would you do if I could throw something down on the floor next week and say, that thing cannot be tamed, and if that thing bites you, it'll ruin your whole life here, it'll ruin your family's life, it could ruin this entire church, in fact, it could destroy the nation, and it's for sure going to send you to hell. What would you do with it then? But we've got it in our mouth. But we don't really think about how deadly that is. Now, what does it mean, no man can tame the tongue? Well, here's the thing it means. You can control it. Let's suppose that you bring a tiger out of the jungle and he's 12 years old. What's the chances of me taming him? You'd say, no, you need to get him too young, so you can't tame him. Well, I'll tell you what I can do. I can bring him under control. I can put him in a cage, and I can take my whip in there, and I can take my chairs in there, and I can bring him under control so that he knows when I say jump, he can jump up there, and he'll jump, and I can put him through his circus acts. But what's the difference between that tiger and a three-year-old kitten, cat that I have had since birth, and I've got it sitting over here on this table? What's the difference?
If I turn my back,
see, that tiger, I can walk up that tiger, I can whip that thing, I can get out and he'll stand there and he'll even quiver. But I had better always watch myself, because I cannot tame that tiger. When that tiger gets a chance, that tiger will attack. That cat won't. If the cat attacks, there's something wrong with the cat. See, it's got some kind of a disease. That's the same way that tongue. I can control my tongue, but I can't tame it. I can't tame it. Now, how then should I look at my tongue? Every day when I get up, I have a tiger in my mouth. I have a wild, vicious, untamable beast in my mouth, and if it gets a chance, it's going to spit out. And it is going to attack. So, if I can realize that and understand that's the power of the tongue, then I'll watch it, won't I? I'll watch that tongue. But again, how many mornings do you get up and you say, now I better watch my tongue today? Oh, you get up, I better wash my teeth, because I don't want anybody to think I have bad breath. That's just about as bad as you can get. Take a bath, change clothes, change shirts. I wouldn't wear the same shirt 2 days like that, because somebody might take a whip. And, oh, that would be bad, you see, in there. But my tongue, what to do with my tongue? Well, I don't even think about it. That's the point I'm getting at. See, I don't even think about it. I think from here on, every morning, I'm going to stick that thing out in front of the mirror and look at it and talk to myself about that tongue. That's what I'm trying to say. This book is the book of common sense. It's a book of practical Christianity. It's a book that tells us how to live. It's a book that tells us the most dangerous thing that we have in our life. And one of the dangers is we don't really understand it. All right, verse 9. He tells us the inconsistency of the tongue. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come forth blessings and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way. Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Neither can salt water produce fresh. So what he's saying is the natural order of things is that if you have a break in the ground, that's the idea of this, a spring, there's a break in the ground. If there's fresh water coming out, it won't turn into salt. If there's salt water comes out, you don't need to go back in 10 minutes and take a taste to see whether it's fresh water coming out. If you have a fig tree out in your backyard, you don't need to run out there to see if there's apples growing on it. Right? That's the point he's making. Nature is consistent. Now, with the tongue, here it is, we have an opening. And what we do is the most unnatural, inconsistent thing in the world. With this tongue, we bless God. Now, how fluently, eloquently, and flowery can we bless God? It's amazing, isn't it? The thoughts that can come off of the tongue of man. What a wonderful instrument he has in blessing God. And then turns right around, and here's somebody that's made in the image of God, and what can we do to them? We can curse them. When you curse your fellow man, you're asking God's punishment to come down upon them, really, is what it is. And whenever I do that, it merely means that here's the kind of guy I am. Now get this picture, and then you tell me the kind of guy. I feel I'm an individual. I can stay here and I can bless God this way, and then I can look down and call His curse down upon you. Where does that leave me? What kind of a fellow am I? You bet I'm somebody special. That's right. That's right. I am a lower than God. That's in my favor. I'm at least that humble, you see. But I am much higher than man, you see, that somebody made in His image. And I have that ability, and I can do it with that tongue. It's just amazing, James says, that we have that ability. And so we need to think about that. We need to think about it seriously when we look at people that are in a situation that we curse and talk about what a horrible individual that they are. There's a word here, a statement that is made by Augustine, the guy that invented Calvinism, and he had this to say. It hung up in his dining room. He said, "He that is accustomed to slander absent men may never sit at this table again." A sign that Helen has hanging in her kitchen said, "Be careful of the words you say. Keep them soft and sweet. You never know from day to day which ones you'll have to eat." Pretty good thing to have in a kitchen where you're in there thinking about eating. And so what we need to do is really take those words very, very seriously and that tongue very, very seriously. Okay, now with that, we close the section on the tongue. Now, next week, we're going to start in verse 13, and it's a different section. It's a different idea. It'll not be the tongue. But what it's going to be dealing with, since we're thinking about it, is more of the inward disposition of the guy that uses his tongue, right? The troublemaker. And if I don't want to be a troublemaker, and if I want to use my tongue properly, I need wisdom, right? So that's what we're going to talk about next week, is wisdom. The two kinds that there is. Okay, class dismissed.